think I left my Bible in the pew. If you take out your own Bibles and turn to the book of Amos. So here's where we're starting tonight, the book of Amos. Now, where is that book? Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Zechariah, Haggai, Malachi, right? You got it all? So the book of Amos. And I wanted you to see something in the book of Amos that really sets up the passage that we're going to turn to in Matthew 18. And it was out of this teaching that was in the prophecy of Amos that many of the Jews, post the writing of Amos, came to what they would see as a new principle of how they saw God's forgiveness. And I wanted to explain that because it sets up the story that we're going to be reading tonight in Matthew chapter 18. So track with me, Amos chapter 1. And again, we're going to hear this repeating phrase about how God forgives. And again, I don't think the follow-up Jewish community got it correct in terms of their understanding of these texts, but you can see how they end up with this conclusion. Chapter 1 of Amos, verse 3. This is what the Lord says. Note this pattern. For three sins of Damascus, even for four, I will not turn my back. I will not turn back my wrath because she threshed Gilead with sledges having iron teeth. Just notice the phrase, for three sins of Damascus and even for four. That phrase again, verse 6. For three sins of Gaza, even for four. Verse 9, this is what the Lord said. For three sins of Tyre, even for four. Let's look at chapter 2, verse 1. For three sins of Moab, even for four. And then you see it again in verse 4, same thing. And in verse 6, this kind of goes on, this repetition, for three sins and for four. So what happened is that the Jewish scholars looked at that and said, oh, this is what it's teaching, that up to four sins, God will forgive. But the minute you cross that threshold, the forgiveness ends. God says, okay, from here on out, judgment. That was their concept. And Amos was the one that kind of brought that to mind. So when the time Jesus is speaking to disciples, Matthew chapter 18, you can turn there now, the concept of it, this is kind of in the ether. God forgives up to four times, but then it cuts off. There's an ending point where God's forgiveness runs out. And insert then Peter's opening words in Matthew chapter 18. Using that again as our context. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Now, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, God forgives four-ish times. What does that mean? And it's almost as if Peter then like says, and I want to be virtuous in my suggestion, Jesus. How about we come up with the perfect number seven? Up to seven times? Maybe my forgiveness has to extend and it grows even up to seven times. Well done, Peter. Attaboy. And then Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. I wonder what Peter thought when all of a sudden Jesus kind of gave him that corrective. And of course, Jesus is making a note that you count those 77 times, and when you hit 78, you call it quits. That's not what Jesus is saying, and it's going to be very evident in the rest of the text what Jesus is really saying. But think about that in backdrop of what we've seen in Amos. And Jesus all of a sudden kind of turns it all on his heels. No. There's not like this ending point to forgiveness. Forgiveness goes on and on and on. And then Jesus teaches us this parable. And this parable, I think, I want to just show you this because it's sometimes, I'm just going to leave this up while we talk. Because sometimes when we read the text, we don't get what Jesus is really saying, okay? He's going to talk about talents and we're talking about denarii. And I want you to just kind of like get in your mind the scope of what Jesus is saying. One talent is equivalent to 6,000 denarii. A denarii equals a day's worth of work for a laborer. So I took that and I just put like a rough estimate, let's just say 20 some dollars an hour times ish $8 ish, again, all ish. Let's just say $200 a day. And you times that by 600 days of work, 6,000 days of work. One talent in our money is worth $1,200,000. Okay? That's the value in our day of one talent. So now let's just look at the text. Therefore, Jesus says, verse 23, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. Notice again the power dynamics here, king and servant. As he began to settle the accounts, a man who owed him, now look at the word here. What does it say? 10,000 talents. It is easy to read that word in today and say, think of $10,000. No, there's the calculation, okay? 12 with a whole lot of zeros behind it. 12 billion dollars. That's what Jesus is talking about. So you have to get the sense of that, because otherwise this parable can miss its punch. Let's go back to the text. As he began to the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. An astronomical amount. More than you can imagine. That's the point of Jesus. That's the amount the servant owed the king. It would be like when we grew up and he says, that person owes you $1 zillion. Just like, what is a zillion? I don't know, but it's more than you can ever think and ever imagine. That's the point of 10,000 talents. It's almost an understatement, verse 25. Since he was not able to pay. Yeah. This was a debt he would never be able to pay. The master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. Now, let's just add here. This was above and beyond what really the king ought to do. The person responsible for paying the debt in this culture was the man. And his failure to do that would put him in prison. The wife, the children, and the other things were forbidden to touch. But the debt is so great, the king goes and says, all of it, everything. This is the way you're going to have to pay for this thing. Again, the amount of debt and the response to the debt is huge. Verse 26. The servant fell on his knees before him And some texts even have it better because there's like this double falling. He falls and puts his face to the ground. It's that sense of just utter humiliation and needing of somehow to get out of this weightiness of this debt. He fell on his knees, face to the ground, and cries out these words, "Be patient." Note the word. What is he asking for? Is he asking for forgiveness of the loan? That's not his request. He asks for patience. That's what he begged. "And I will pay back everything." So again, you set up the scene. He owes a zillion, and he asks for patience to somehow figure out a way to pay off the zillion. Right now, he, his family, his children, and everything's going to be sold off to try to pay down this debt. And then verse 27. The servant's master. Note again the power dynamic here. Servant's master. Took pity. And sometimes this word in our English is like, oh, poor guy. The word really is compassion. Saw the man at his feet through eyes of mercy and compassion. And what did he do? It says, "Get up and get working. I'll give you some time." No, not at all. Note the text. He cancels the debt and let him go. The master who's owed a zillion goes above and beyond the request and not just gives him patience, but gives him complete freedom. I know all of you, you know the story, and you know where this is going to go, but let this sit into your heart as if you're like landing in it the first time. One denarii is equivalent to a day's wage. $200 a day. 100 days would equal $20,000. Okay, you have that in your mind? But when the servant went out, notice how the power dynamics are different. He went out to one of his fellow servants. That power dynamic now becomes on the same level. Who owed him 100 denarii. Do you see what Jesus is doing? One has a debt that there's no possible way they can pay. Insurmountable, a zillion. And the other person, their debt is absolutely one that could be paid. Yep, could take some time. Takes a little work. But definitely not outside of the bounds of what a person could pay. Little versus a lot. And what is the response? He grabbed him and began to choke him. Note how different he responds than even the master who was owed a zillion. The master, almost as if, gives the opportunity for the person to come in and fall at the feet of the master. Before he can even do that, before he even has a chance almost to open his mouth, the servant's hands are around the neck of his fellow servant. And can you hear him just yelling, "Pay back what you owe me," he demanded. And it's at this point Note the words. They are the exact same words that the servant has just uttered. And it just makes you think. Again, this is a parable, of course, but the point is, he just got done using these same words in front of the master. And now the servant is using the same words back to him. He fell to his knees and begged him. What does he ask for? Not a cancellation, but simply again, patience. And I will pay you back. Remember verse 27? The servant's master had compassion. This servant refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. What a contrast. When the other servant saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed and went and told their master everything that had happened. Some saw that verse as actually picking up the method of the Matthew 18 that we just read ahead of that. Those who are finally going to do something about it, speaking, bringing others along with them as testifiers to what they have seen. And then this. The master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? I want to just pause there. It's like there's two things going on in this text. On one level, it's talking, of course, about forgiveness, because Peter started out with that question. How often do I forgive? The human level. But Jesus has kind of like raised the ante. He's gone up a step. And you remember Psalm 103 that I read off at the beginning? As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. As far as the east is from in the west, so far has he removed the transgressions from us. Jesus elevates this. And he looks at Peter and he looks at the disciples. And he says, you're the fellow servant. You're the servant in this text. You're the one who has received from the hand of God a complete forgiveness of all your sins. Communion. You've received a cancellation of debt that you would never have been able to pay. It makes me think of Romans chapter 3 when Paul kind of speaks in this way. This level of, like, this is who I am. There's no one righteous, not even one. There's no one who understands, no one who seeks God. All have turned away. They've together become worthless. There's no fear of God before their eyes. Chapter 3:19. Now, whatever the law says, it says to those who are under law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing the law. Our debt is a zillion. It is the weightiness of our debt. And when we come face to face with a God who demands that debt to be paid, the question is what will happen? And in compassion and mercy, God cancels that debt through his Son. That's what we received. The question then that Jesus is raising to answer, remember, Peter's initial question, how much should we forgive? He starts with the point, well, Peter, how much have you been forgiven? A little? A little bit more? Or a zillion? Peter, brothers and sisters, we've been forgiven more than we could ever have paid ourselves. The question is then, well, what kind of forgiveness should we offer? If you've received a zillion, how much more shouldn't we be people who offer forgiveness the same way? Do you see how Jesus is answering the question? I just so appreciated the way of Frederick Bruner, and if you know, I've quoted him many times in our series on this, just said it this way, and that's why I put the quote here. Salvation in Matthew is by sheer mercy. Apart from any prior condition of good works, as this parable classically shows. But this salvation, when it is true, here's the point, it produces mercy. And for this servant in our text, there was no fruit. There was no response. There was nothing that came as a product to the recognition of what he had received. And you want to say, are you kidding me? You got $1 zillion. But how often aren't we the same way? We forget the depth that we owe and the forgiveness we've received. I remember in youth ministry, I would often share this story. It says, there's Kelly's in the front row, so I'm going to pick on you. I say, Kelly owes me $5. And out of the blue, he's like, well, okay. Out of the blue, Ben comes up to me. And he says, hey, Pastor Tim, I want to pay for the debt that Kelly owes you. Can you all do this? Good. Isn't that great? Ben just paid $5. How thankful are you going to be, Kelly? You're going to be so thankful, yeah. But I'm sure that will not last very long. But switch this stage here. For some reason, all of a sudden, you owe me $10 million. Exact same scenario. And Ben comes in. He became independently wealthy, sold a couple good cows. At today's beef prices, that would help, right? So he sells it, and he pays me $10 million. Exact same contract, same thing. What happens then? A debt was paid completely. How would your response be different? One to the other. You'd have to do a lot to pay back, right? No, if it was free gift. The way we respond to the gift received says something about how we understand the nature of the gift. If your response to receiving $10 million is identical to receiving $5, you'd say, well, you've missed the point. Are you kidding me? That's all the thanksgiving you're going to give is like you've received a $5 bill? What? This is what Jesus is talking about. We've received $1 zillion. We've received the gift we could never possibly have paid. And in receiving that, the question is, what happens then? Just a little bit of thanksgiving? or like our servant today, it didn't change anything. I want to show you one more text, Genesis chapter 4. Without going in into all of the backstory, this is a picture about revenge. Verse 23. Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain avenged seven times, then Lamech 77 times. Many have said this is Jesus' response in Matthew 18. Turning upside down this code of revenge, getting back to the nth degree. It's like he presses that all away. So that's garbage. Because those who are true followers of Christ, who understand the depth of the forgiveness that they've been received through Jesus Christ, revenge is no longer the thing you get. But instead, it's you give forgiveness. How much forgiveness do you give, Peter? How little Peter would know at this point in the text that he would need to be forgiven deeply. But what a gift to know that Peter, just like us, receive that forgiveness. I love the way Jesus starts. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven. This is the heavenly principle. This is no longer the worldly revenge. This is the principle from heaven. God has forgiven you. A zillion. Now, go and do likewise. The last part of this chapter says this, verse 32, then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me, Cush. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? And then this is the contrast. The gospel isn't all, it's all just beautiful and wonderful. Because the other side to mercy is what? Justice. You failed to receive that mercy. And the fruit of you receiving that mercy is to offer mercy. And it's evident that you haven't received it, nor do you give it. Your heart isn't changed. And what's the response? In anger, his master turned him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. And when would that happen? That's called eternity. You failed to receive the gift, the perfect gift of forgiveness. Verse 35, this is how my heavenly Father will treat you unless you forgive your brother from your heart.
we've received a zillion, far more than $5 or $10 million. So we need to be forgiving. How much? A zillion. May God give us the strength to do likewise.